Thank you very much, Mr. Gilbert Javier, and good afternoon to all of you, brethren, and a very, very happy and pleasant Sabbath day to all of you. It's really a great privilege to be able to speak to you this afternoon. I was requested by Mr. Danny Luker while we were still in Cincinnati, if I could somehow give an update of what's going on in our country, in the Philippines, as well as in the congregation that I've been pastoring. Well, I bring you greetings, brethren, from your brethren in the Philippines. And it's been 4 years since the last time we've been able to visit you here. I can still remember that I think we met in this same place, and I gave you some updates. So at this point in time, I'd like to give you an update of what's been happening in the Philippines ever since that time. Well, talking about the brethren attending the Philippines in United, during the last Feast of Tabernacles, the total attendance in the Philippines rose to 679. So there are 679 brethren who kept the Feast of Tabernacles in the Philippines last year. And there were three feast sites in the Philippines. We had one feast site in Luzon, that is in Baguio City, where I was the festival coordinator. And then we also have a feast site in the Visayas, that's the middle groupings of islands of the country. They meet in Iloilo. I think some of you were able to keep the Feast of Tabernacles there, I think last year or year prior to that year. And also our biggest is in Mindanao. So the distribution of those attending in the Feast of Tabernacles last year was 62% in Mindanao. So most are in Mindanao, 21% in the Visayas, and only 17% in Luzon. So 17% in Luzon of the 679 brethren who attended the Feast of Tabernacles. Now there are about 21 congregations in the Philippines right now. Three in Luzon, that is in Baguio City. There is a small congregation in Baguio as well as in Dagupan City. And then we have the Manila congregation, of which I'm pastoring. And then in the Visayas, we have four churches in the Visayas, one in Bacolod and three in Leyte. I think that's three in Leyte. And we're beginning to have a Bible study group also in one of the islands there, the major islands in the Visayas, that's in Cebu City. So we're starting a Bible study there, I think, for about 20. Am I right, Norman? Yes, about 20 people are attending our Bible study in Cebu. And then of the 21 congregations, I mentioned there are three in Luzon and four in the Visayas, 14 are in Mindanao. There are 14 congregations in Mindanao. And there are only three elders attending to these congregations in Mindanao, 14. There are three. In the Visayas, there are three elders also attending to these four congregations. And then in Luzon, I'm attending to the Manila congregation, and the two small congregation in the northern part of Luzon is attended by one of our elders also. He hasn't been here to the general conference in as much as he's been denied his U.S. visa a number of times. So probably you could include that in your prayers that somehow our minister in the north will be granted a U.S. visa so that he'll be able to attend the General Conference of Elders. It's unfortunate that when he was still part of Worldwide, he was given a multiple indefinite visa. But when he was applying as a minister of United, that multiple indefinite visa was canceled and he was denied entry to the United States. Well, we really couldn't understand that, but those things really happen. So maybe we can include him in our prayers. His name is Mr. Aries Dison. He's our minister servicing our brethren in northern part of Luzon. Now, in 2005, that was 2 years ago, the Philippine National Office was established in Davao. So we now have a national office for the Philippine work It's in Davao City because the, well, most of the brethren are in Davao anyway, so the office was established there 2 years ago in Mindanao with our senior pastor, Mr. David Baker, who is a minister in New York upstate, being the office manager. So he's in New York upstate and he's managing the office in the Philippines. He's the office manager there. Of course, he's ably assisted by one of our one of the employees that we have there, Mr. Daniel Macareg, who's also a graduate of Ambassador College. And last year, the responsibility of Mr. Baker in the national office was expanded and to include the rest of Asia. So the work in the entire Asia is now being managed from the Philippines. So the good news distribution for Asia is now being done through the Philippine National Office. So the work was really expanded because we only have a few members in all in other Asian countries. Like we have 12 members in Singapore, 32 members in Malaysia, 10 in Indonesia, 7 in Hong Kong, 6 in Thailand, 3 in India, and 7 members in Sri Lanka. So we have those members scattered all over Asia that the church is now servicing through the national office in the Philippines. So Mr. David Baker, responsibility was expanded. He's no longer just the senior pastor for the Philippines. He's now the senior pastor for the whole of Asia. So that is really a great area of work that he's responsible for. Well, now in Manila, the congregation that I where I'm pastoring, our attendance in the Manila congregation has surprisingly increased since last year. Last Days of Unleavened Bread, our attendance, meaning 2006, was 63. That was our highest attendance for the Days of Unleavened Bread. This year, it rose to 99. Now we're having an average attendance of 93 each Sabbath, ever since we transferred to a new more or less permanent place. Brethren have been, new people have been coming in, and most of them are new people who got in touch with the church through the internet. So many of the brethren, many of the prospective members attending the Manila congregation got in touch with the work through the internet. Now, as a result of this exciting increase in attendance that we're having in the Manila congregation and having been blessed with a more or less permanent place to meet, we have begun having our regular spokesman club because the church is growing and we need more people serving in the church. So we're trying to do our best to be able to train new people who can serve in our areas. We've started also women's club and regular youth activities because, well, maybe about 40% of our attendance are young people. There are many young people attending the church in the Manila congregation. So God has been blessing the church with good growth in spite of the difficulties that the country is right now facing. Well, since the last time we've been here, the country's population have also increased. In 2004, when I gave an update, the population of the Philippines was 83 million. 83 million for a land area. Of course, we have 7,107 islands. The country is composed of 7,107 islands, as I've mentioned. During low tide and during high tide, it's down to 7,000. So 107 islands go under the ocean. But we cover only about 116,000 square miles. 83 million in 2003. Now the estimate is now 90 million. Our population has increased to 90 million this year. And they said that the poverty line has somewhat softened. before when I came here, I said that 70% of the population is below the poverty line. Now, probably it's about 60% of the people are below the poverty line. Well, the poverty line is $250 for a family of five earning $250 a month. That's the poverty line. So that means, about 65% are earning below $250 a month in the Philippines. And of course, the church is just a microcosm of the country. And so we also have a good number of brethren attending the church, not only in the Manila congregation, but the rest of the churches around the Philippines who are either unemployed or underemployed, meaning they're just earning, maybe just enough to make ends meet. So for a number of these brethren, the church usually provide assistance to a number of them just to be able to attend Sabbath services. Otherwise, they won't be able to attend Sabbath services if the church will not provide at least for their bus fare to be able to come to services. And somehow this is also aggravated by the political condition that we have in the country. We don't know if it's going to be stable or not, because this coming Monday, that's May 14, is a local election day. So it's a local election day, and many are concerned about election-related violence that may occur. If you just check the internet, you will see that there are many election hotspots in the country, and many soldiers have been sent to all these other hotspots. You see, if we have feast fever in the church when Feast of Tabernacles is just around the corner, in the Philippines we have election fever. So everyone is so hyped about election. We have election fever in the Philippines, and as election day draw closer, election-related violence usually increases. So we can also request you to pray about the situation that we will be having in the Philippines. We hope and pray that the election this coming Monday will be peaceful, and there will be no ballot snatching. So that's very common in the Philippines. This is because candidates for elected positions are either seeking to retain or grab power almost at all costs. Almost at all costs. They want to stay in power, and those who want to seek elected position wants to grab power at all costs. So we also have politicians in the country who already occupy an elected post who are still seeking to win another elected post. They are still incumbent of another elected, and they still want to. So these people can seem to be content with what they already have. No, there seem to be no contentment. It seems that, probably this is not only true in the Philippines, but, where there are people, because I think lack of contentment really is part of being humans or human nature that we need to overcome. So people always seem to want more power, more riches. And come to think of it, almost only a fraction of 10%, probably 5 or 10%, control most of the land areas, maybe more than 70% of the land area in the country. And these people who have more still want to have more. So, but I believe this proclivity to want more is not limited to politicians alone. If we are not careful, we can be guilty as well. I believe it is inherent in human nature, and therefore the Bible, I believe, has something to say about this human proclivity. And so the rest of the time that I have here, I'd like us to look at some scriptures in the Bible regarding this proclivity to want more riches and power in order that we will be able, as members of the Church of God, be able to guard against this proclivity. So let's look at one scripture, brethren, here in the Bible, in the book of Hebrews. Here in the book of Hebrews, chapter 13, let's look at verse 5 of the book of Hebrews, chapter 13. Here we read, "Let your conduct be without covetousness." So I think this is really the main cause of this human proclivity to want more. That's why the Apostle Paul is telling us that let your conduct be without covetousness. So I think the Apostle Paul wasn't saying here that it's not wrong to have power and authority or even to have money, but it can be a problem when we allow covetousness to set in. As we can read in 1 Timothy chapter 6, let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 6, brethren, beginning in verse 9. We read here, "But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation." So this inordinate desire, this covetousness, fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition, like the politicians who wanted to win at all costs. In verse 10, "For the love of money." So this is the inordinate desire to have more power, more money, because money is power. "For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows." So as we can see here, brethren, it's not money, but covetousness. The desire, the inordinate desire, covetousness, is the root of evil. Well, brethren, as we can see, our world today has bought into the myth that power, riches, is equivalent to contentment. Power and riches is equivalent to contentment. That they go together and that they are the same thing. But what's happening? When you have riches, you want to be richer. You want to reach for more riches. Once you grab power, you want to hold on to that power and to have more power. Once you become a mayor, you want to be a governor. Once you become a governor, you want to be a president or a senator. So it's this inordinate desire that is in human beings. So the world has bought into that myth that power, riches, is equal to contentment. But when they reach that peak of power, they still wanted to have more. So we can see many people who are holding powerful positions still not content. They always want more, and they live in dread that they will lose what they already have. Now Hebrews chapter 5 continues. "Be content with such things as you have." Well, brethren, what do we have? What do we have, brethren? Do we immediately think of the position we hold? Is that what we have? Or our savings account? Or our properties or holdings? Or the lack of it? Is that how we view what we have? Well, brethren, I'm sorry to say that if that is what we're looking for, we might be looking in the wrong places. Where do we need to look for, brethren? Where do we need to look? Well, let's continue reading Hebrews chapter 5. "For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you." Verse 6, "So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear what man can do to me." So here, brethren, we can read, "For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you." So the Apostle Paul is saying that if Christ is in us, then we have what it takes to be contented. Because it says here, if you look at the context again, let your conduct be without covetousness, be content with such things as you have, for he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So if we have Christ in us, we have what it takes, brethren, to be content. John chapter 14, let's go to John chapter 14, and let's just put our hands to that chapter in Hebrews. In John chapter 14 and verse 23, this is a promise that Jesus Christ has given to us. Here in verse 23, we read, Jesus answered and said to him, if anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. So meaning that if we have riches, brethren, power, and everything else, but God, brethren, what the scripture is saying is still, we really don't have much at all. We really don't have much at all. And we will still crave for more. But brethren, if we have God the Father and Jesus Christ actively dwelling in us, and little else, the Bible says, we can be content. We don't need to crave for more power. We don't need to crave more riches, because we have Christ and God the Father dwelling in each and every one of us. And Jesus Christ promised that he will never leave us nor forsake us. So we can be content. As we can, let's go back to 1 Timothy chapter 6, brethren. First Timothy chapter 6 again, and let's read beginning in verse 6. It says here, godliness, meaning having God the Father in Jesus Christ dwelling in us with contentment, is great gain. Continuing on in verse 7, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. In verse 8, and having food and clothing, with these we shall be content, because Jesus said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Yes, brethren, it's better to have a satisfied soul than a powerful possession or a thick wallet. It's better to have a satisfied soul than a powerful possession or a thick wallet. As we can see, brethren, all around us, people are never satisfied. Contentment eludes this world because they are looking for it in the wrong places. Contentment, brethren, does not come from having power and riches, but from knowing that God dwells with us and shall never leave us nor forsake us. Happy Sabbath to all of you.